Let us prepare ourselves for puja. Develop the sadha, the faith, then the virya. Then mindfully we shall commence the puja. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Pho. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Pho. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Pho. Namo Quan Sim Pusa. Namo Quan Sim Pusa. Namo Quan Sim Pusa. Namo Ami Tho Pho. Namo Ami Tho Pho. Namo Ami Tho Pho. Namo Mila Pho. Namo Mila Pho. Namo Mila Pho. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Arahang Samma Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Sanghang Namami. Okay. Can be seated. Then turn to page 1 of our chanting book. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu micacara veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Surameraya majjhapamadatthana veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Okay, now we will chant the Padipa Puja, offering of likes. Ganna sarappadithena Dipena tamadang sina Tilokadipang sambuddhang Pujayami tamonudang Ganda sambarayutena Do pe na hang sugang hina puja ye puja ni yang tang puja baca namo temang vanna ganda guno pe tang etang kesuma santatin puja yami monindasa Siri pada sarorohe puje mi bedang kusumena nena punena metena ceho tu mokang pupang milayati yata idang me kayo tata yati binasa bawang Adiva setu no bante paniyang parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutemang Adiva setu no bante pali parikapitang Anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutemang adivase tuno bante bojana parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutemang. Okay, now we turn to page 5. We shall do our puja aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all this offering. Significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha bring forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness of ignorance therein. Significance of offering of flower. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition soonest possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, free nibbana, making of overall aspiration. By the power of all these merits born of these offerings, may our spiritual faculties of Sada, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya be further strengthened until they become balas or powers, sharing and transfer merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the conditions and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Triple Gem. Buddhang pujayami. Dhammang pujayami. Sanghang pujayami. Okay. Y'all can be seated. Yeah? Just relax yourself. Maintain some form of attentiveness. Yeah? Then we will commence our meditation session. We will off the light. Yeah? For those who already know how to meditate, you can straight away start your meditation. For those who are still new and who still need to develop the training, yeah, you listen attentively. I will give you some instruction. Yeah. The main purpose of this formal meditation training is to train our mind. Yeah. Those whose mind has yet to be trained, yeah, you need to develop the technique or skillful means that can help you train this mind so that the mental hindrance that cause your mind to be heedless, to have this problem of lack of peace, lack of inner calmness, can be overcome. According to Lord Buddha, the reason why living being is not peaceful and they cannot be in the meditative state is because of the mental hindrance. He called it the five mental hindrance. These are mental states that will hinder your mind from entering the meditative states of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness within. And the five mental hindrance, as we have gone through before, they are sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor or lethargic mind, then restlessness of mind and doubt. For those who are still new, you may have to read up a bit. It's all in the transcript book, the Heart Sutta note, and also in the Ancient Path, that book. When we understand that these are the things that cause our mind to be heedless, to be in a state of thoughtlessness, means this mind is not peaceful, not mindful. The lack of peace is a result of this mental hindrance that hinders your mind from becoming peaceful. So what we need to do is we need to cultivate the opposite five spiritual faculties that will enable us to understand spiritual teaching and overcome the mental hindrance so that our mind will always be at peace with the inner calmness, inner awareness, and inner mindfulness. So these are the meditative state. That's why spiritual faculty can bring about the spiritual mind that can enable us to meditate and develop the understanding of the spiritual teaching as taught by the Buddha. Before we have this training, we are unable to become peaceful. So for those who are still new to the teaching, who has yet to develop the stability of the five spiritual faculty, you will need to develop some skillful means to train your mind. So I'll give you some instruction on how to do it. Okay, you just make sure you have a stable posture. Relax body and mind. Then just breathe in, breathe out naturally. Then check your backbone. Make sure it's straight. Then after that, relax body and mind, completely relax, silent everything. Then you close your eyes. Just feel, don't think, feel. Maintain attention at your forehead, feel your forehead. If you can detect any tension, any tightness or any stress within, you just feel it. Then relax into it, feel it soothingly, relax. Wherever there is any tension, any tightness, or any stress within, you just relax into it. Then maintain silence. We call this the mind sweeping method, starting from the forehead. Then after that, you sweep the mind down or scan it down to your eye muscle. Feel, don't think, just feel. Again, relax every part of your eye muscle. Wherever there is any tension, any tightness or any stress within, just relax, relax and relax it completely. Then you continue to sweep and scan it down to your facial muscle. Feel it, each and every strand of your facial muscle. Make sure it is relaxed. Relax into every mind state that arises. You just feel the facial muscle, each and every layer of it. Sweep it down. Relax into it. Feel it soothingly. Relax, relax and relax. Then in order to assist you further, you can assume yourself facing a mirror, radiating a radiant smile. When you can radiate a radiant smile, you have joy, you have happiness. That joy will enable you to relax naturally. So visualize yourself facing a mirror, radiating this radiant smile. With that smile and joy, you will be in a state of relax. Naturally, the facial muscle will relax. Because to maintain that joy, your mind will be happy, peaceful, and in a relaxed state. Then after that, you radiate this love or metta. You can follow what I recite. May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. When you recite, you must recite with your feeling, with your understanding. So when we recite, may I, this body and mind of mine, you must feel your body and mind be well and happy, well and happy. Feel the well-being and happiness deep within your body and mind. Each and every cells within your entire body and being. Just feel it and relax into it. Then you can repeat this. May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. May its mind states too be free from all suffering, both mental and physical suffering, free from all harm and danger. May no harm come to it. May its mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May it keep itself happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within your hearts. Then after that, you can radiate this same metta or loving kindness to your loved ones. May my loved ones too be well, happy and peaceful, free from all harm and danger. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. And may them too keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then we can radiate this same loving kindness or metta to all beings within this vicinity. May all beings within this vicinity, known and unknown, seen and unseen, together with all Kayanamitas, co-meditator, may they all too be well, happy and peaceful always. Radiate this love and well-being to them all. Then may their mind states too be free from all suffering, both mental and physical suffering, free from all harm and danger. May it too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May it keep itself happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then we can extend this metta to all beings within the entire existence. May all beings within the whole of SS2 Petaling Jaya, Selangor, Malaysia, Southeast Asia, Asia, Mother Earth, our solar system, our galaxy, then our Milky Way, then extending to all beings within the entire universe. May they all too be well, happy and peaceful always, free from all harm and danger, free from all suffering, mental and physical suffering. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. By now you should be more calm and more peaceful. Then you just relax everything and come back to your facial muscle. Just feel relaxed. Feel it soothingly, relax. Then after that, you move your attention down to your neck, feel, relax, don't think. Then your shoulder, feel, relax. Then move to your hand, feel, relax, back to shoulder. Then you move it down to your heart area or chest area. This is a very important location within your body. This is where your seat of consciousness is. This is where the life force and the heartbeat arise and pass away. You just relax and silence everything, then feel. You can detect any tension, any tightness or any stress within. You just relax them all. Then for those who really know how to meditate, when you are very quiet, very peaceful, your mind is very subtle, you just allow it to be and let the peacefulness settle down by itself. Then finally, if your breathing becomes very subtle, then your awareness drops to your heart area or mind base, chest area. Then you just relax everything and just silent and feel. Wherever you can detect any vibration or any stress within or any tension, even your heartbeat. If you already develop the skill, the ability to be mindful, you can detect many things there. The very fine vibration, you can also detect them. Then the heartbeat will become very prominent. Initially it's like very gross. Then later on, wherever you detect them, you just silent and be with it. Don't do anything, just silent everything and stay with the vibration or your heartbeat. Then when you are able to be aware of it, just be with it, the mind and the movement as one, it will become very quiet and very peaceful. Then you can stay there for as long as you want. But for those who are new, if you are not sensitive, you cannot detect all this, it's okay. You just feel your chest area, like you feel your forehead. Just relax into it. Any tension, any tightness, any stress within, you just feel it and relax into it. Feel it soothingly, relax. Then you move it down to your stomach, feel, relax. Abdomen, feel, relax. Then you continue to move it down to your leg, feel, relax. Then your buttock, feel, relax. Then you can reverse the whole of this mind sweeping method. Starting with your buttock, feel, relax. Your leg, feel, relax. And your abdomen, feel, silent everything, and relax. Then you sweep it up to your stomach, feel, relax. When you feel and relax, you don't think, you become peaceful. This is how you decondition your heedless thinking and train your mind to be at the location you want it to be. You continue to relax and silent and just feel. Then you move your attention up to your heart area. Again, just relax and feel. Then after that, you move it up to your neck, your shoulder, feel, relax, hand, then back to shoulder, then back to neck, feel, relax. Then you move it up, sweep it up to your facial muscle, feel it, each and every strand of it, feel it soothingly, relax, relax, and relax. Then after that, you continue to move it up to your facial muscle, then eye muscle, feel, relax, then forehead, feel, relax. By now, you should be more calm and more peaceful. Then now, we will have to move on to stabilize this mindfulness or silent mind, peaceful mind that we have developed through this mind sweeping method training. So again, like you feel your forehead, now you feel your breathing. The Buddha called it mindfulness of the in and out breath or anapanasati. So now we train our mind to develop the ability to be mindful of our breathing. So you start off by silent everything, just feel in front of your nostril. You can detect your breathing. Then like the Buddha say, breathing in, away. Breathing out, away. Means your mind, awareness, and the activity of breath move as one. So when the mind and the breathing move as one without thought, that is awareness. Sati, mindfulness. Mindfulness of the in and out breath, anapanasati, will develop. Initially, it's not easy because you are not used to it. Anyway, be patient. Every time the mind wanders off, which is a normal thing, because the untrained mind thinks a lot, heedless. So every time it wanders off, you bring the attention back to your nostril. Maintain that patient, that awareness or that peacefulness, then silence everything and just detect, allow the mind to detect the breathing. Every time the mind wanders off, bring it back, silent and just feel. Then together, the breath and the mind move as one, breathing in, aware, breathing out, aware. Expect the mind to wander off many, many times. But as long as you are patient, within a very short time, sometimes 5-10 minutes, the awareness of in and out breath or mindfulness of the in and out breath will stabilize. Then your mind will become very calm, very peaceful, and very tranquil. That is a sign of good practice of anapanasati. When you are mindful without thought, you will become very calm, very peaceful. Then you will experience a type of spiritual calmness which they call piti. Piti is a spiritual calmness born of a quiet mind, a mind that is mindful without thought. When piti arises, you feel very good. You are just aware without thought, and the mind state is very beautiful. You can experience that spiritual calmness leading to spiritual rupture or joy within your mind states. Then you can continue to relax into it and allow it to stabilize. Piti will transform further until you experience blissfulness. They call it sukha. Sukha is a much more refined state of piti. When piti arises, becomes stable and strong, you just continue to relax and maintain mindfulness of the in and out breath. Then after a while, the mind will become more quiet, more peaceful. And from piti, it will transform into sukha. Sukha is a very blissful state of mind. Very quiet, very peaceful. Then normally the breathing will become more and more refined, longer, calmer. So I will allow you to continue to develop this training. Then I will ring the bell after about 15 to 20 minutes from now. Then for those who really know how to meditate, when piti sukha arise, just relax into it and silent everything. Then not long, you will experience what we call pasati, or the silent mind. The silent mind is the meditative mind. So pasati is a tranquility state of mind, stillness of mind, when your mind has become very subtle, very peaceful and very calm. You will experience this state of pasati. Pasati will make you calm and peaceful. The mind like so quiet, so still, no more movement. That is the meditative mind, the silent mind without thought, fully aware, stable. Okay, I'll let you meditate. Then after that I will ring the bell.
Thank you.
For those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those who have not, slowly, mindfully, come out of meditation. Then turn to page 6. We will continue with our invocation to the devas. I will read to you the English translation, then we chant the Pali. Invocation to the devas. In this universe in their entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good doctrine of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. Samanta chakavalesu atra gacchantu devata saddhamman muni dajasa sunantu sakamokadang dhamma svanan kalo ayang badanta Dhamma svanan kalo ayang badanta Dhamma svanan kalo ayang badanta Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa Namo atasa bhagavato Arahato sama sambuddhasa Namo atasa bhagavato Arahato sama sambuddhasa Ittipiso bhagava arahang sama sambuddho Vijja charana sampanno sugato lokavido anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati satta deva manusanang buddho bhagavati Swakato bhagavato dhammo sanditiko akaliko ehi paseko opanayiko pacatang veditabu vinohiti Supatipanno bhagavato savakasango Ujupatipanno bhagavato savakasango Yayapatipanno bhagavato savakasango Samichi patipanno bhagavato savakasango Yadidang chattari purisa yukani Atha purisa pugala Esa bhagavato savakasango Ahuneyo, pahuneyo, dakkeneyo, anjali karaniyo, anutarang punyaketang lokasati. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Triple Gem. Buddhang pujemi. Dhammang pujemi. ังหังปุจเจมิโอเคJust relax yourself, then maintain some form of attentiveness. Then we will continue from where we stop. I think the last Tuesday we were at chapter, I think we finished chapter 11. We finished chapter 12. We were at page 94. Turn to page 94. We didn't finish chapter 12, page 94. Okay, before we continue, we will read the opening verse. Turn to page 1.Verse for opening a sutta. The unsurpassed, profound, and wonderful Dhamma is difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of aeons. I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it, and I vow to fathom the Tathagata's true meaning. So this opening verse is very important to develop the faith. Then through that faith,you will understand why you have to pay very, very serious attention to this teaching. Because these are very profound, unsurpassed and wonderful teachings. And it's very difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of eons. Now you have the condition to hear it, see it, receive and uphold it. You have to vow to fathom the truth.Its true meanings. Okay, now we turn to page 94. So I will read through this part, which I think at the Sunday Wu Pingqing's sharing, even though it was not recorded, but I did mention about this.Former life of Anuruddha, such a well-practiced being who during the time of Sakyamuni Buddha became one of the top 10 disciples. But during the early days, he also, because of delusion, went into some serious karmic hiccup. I will read through from the top. How many times people attempt to teach you? The same retribution befalls those who are stingy with the Dhamma. For instance, in a former life, Anuruddha endured the retribution of extreme stupidity because prior to that he had known the Dhamma.And had refused to speak it for others. Later he planted many good roots. So when he met Sakyamuni Buddha, he certified to the fruit of Arahantship. If you destroy Sutta, there is no telling when you will again see a Buddha. In the future, you will be stupid and subject to unthinkable many additional retributions.So, karmic retribution, you have to be careful. Sometimes you cannot just because you think you are in position, then you think you can do a lot of things. It's just like throughout history, I think we have also come across certain type of emperor or king doing certain things.Even in China, there was one emperor, I think. But he did a lot of good things too. I think it was Xi Wangti. He burned everything. All the, what they call, whatever. He burned a lot of books, I know. He burned a lot of books. But at the same time, he unified China. He's come out with the same, what they call, system of weights, communication, and words. You can speak different dialect, pronounce it differently, but when you write the word, it is the same. So that actually created great, what they call, benefits to society at that time. You may speak different place, different language or dialect, but when you write the Mandarin words, everybody understands. Then the weight also same. When you standardize, you don't have complication. When you go from one place to another place, it's just like the metric system. Later on, the Western civilization also realized that. Initially, the British, they come out with the FPS system, foot pound in second or something like that. So, if multiple of 12, 1 foot is 12 inches, then 1 yard is 36 inches. So later on, Germany realized that this is a very backward system, very difficult to standardize, and very difficult to simplify the education field, especially in the scientific field. So they came out with a metric system which is all in tens of multiple. So kilogram is 1,000 gram. And you got all this millimeter. 10 millimeter is 1 centimeter. 10 centimeter is 1 meter. Then 1,000 meter is 1 kilometer. Then similarly you have the weight, kilogram and all those things. But when you destroy certain things that are of spiritual values, you have to be careful. It's just like when you, we call it the triple gem. If you do not honor the triple gem, respect the triple gem, because these are the, what they call the gems of all the precious stones. And they are very, very sacred. They are also very, very pure. So if you are not careful, when you abuse the triple gem, or when you do something that is very negative towards the triple gem, it can bring forth great karmic retribution. Then it can actually obstruct the cultivator for very, very long. So all these are karmic retribution that can arise if you are not careful. So they have given an example, former life Anuruddha. He has to endure the karmic retribution of extreme stupidity because of what he did in certain life. So prior to that, he had actually known the Dhamma, but he had refused to speak it for others. Don't know what's the reason. There could be some very strange reason. And just because of that, the karmic retribution, when it come back, later on, luckily it seems, later on he planted many good roots. So when he met Sakyamuni Buddha, he was able to be certified to the fruits of arahantship. So here Jianhua mentioned, if you destroy suttas, there is no telling when you will again see a Buddha. Like those people who don't understand, they destroy, like Qing Shi Huang, that time Shi Huang Ti. Let's say you burn all those suttas, you ban them. Then you created such what they call Sikhism among the monastic and all those things, then it leads to the downfall, and it leads to Dhamma ending age and all those things. So all this coming retribution can be very severe. Then when you abuse the Buddha Dhamma and the Sangha, the Triple Gem, it can be equally detrimental. Because when you understand the importance and sacredness of all this teaching and the Triple Gem, then you develop the respect, the gratitude, the wholesomeness towards protecting the Triple Gem. Or just like what we recite, we share merits, we transfer merits with the devas, the Dhamma protectors, then we invite them to share in all these merits. Then we wish in return they can help protect the sasana, the dispensation, keep the teaching for as long as can, and help propagate the teaching. So all these are very wholesome. Then the field of merits is immeasurable. But if you do the opposite, what will happen? Similarly, the karmic retribution will be equally powerful, but in the negative sense. So instead of reaping the wholesomeness, the meritorious action of all this understanding, through delusion, you do the opposite. So this is how karmic retribution can be very severe. So it is mentioned here by Sun Hwa-tu, in the future, if you do that, if you destroy sutta, there is no telling when you will see a Buddha again. In the future, you will be stupid and subject to unthinkable many additional retribution. So these are the things that the cultivator who understand, they will never do. So you have to be very mindful when you go through existence. That's why you must make this determination to have this understanding life after life, so that you will not be subject to any possibility of such delusion that can cause you to do all those things. Sometimes because of your views, your opinion, your conditioning, wrong view, then you can do a lot of very, very severe karmic thing. Okay, this part I think is quite easy to comprehend. So we move on. The next paragraph, page 94. Offering to the Sangha vary according to country and custom. In Thailand and Burma, one offer food to the Sangha because in those countries, members of the Sangha go. The word begging is not so appropriate for alms round. Pindapata is alms round. They don't beg for food. They go for alms round. They offer condition for lay people to develop the generosity so that it's a field of merits for them. Then because they are worthy of offering and respect, it's a field of merits, a synergy. So this is the monk's tradition established by Sakyamuni. So in country like Thailand, they still maintain the forest tradition of Pindapata. I'm not very sure about Burma. Is it still being practiced? Pindapat, they still go out in Burma? Yeah, they still go out. Oh, that's good. So this Pindapata, which is going for alms round, is a very good tradition. Every household save a bowl of food to give to the Sangha member when he comes for alms round, not begging. There are four kinds of offering which may be made to the Sangha they are worthy of these four things. The monk's requisite, they call it. First one is food and drinks. Then clothing, means the monk's robe. Sangha member must depend upon the laity to provide them with offerings of food, drinks and clothing. Then medicines may be given as an offering and stored until the need for them arise. Then of course you can also provide lodging, shelter, or what they call lodging. So here they use the word bathing. You provide them with a place to sleep, but it has to be a proper shelter. People who are at home should make this offering. People who have left the home life receive them. Since Sangha members receive offering in that way, they cultivate the three reflection, the five contemplation, and take their daily meal. Actually, members of the lay community as well as members of the Sangha should practice the three recollection as they eat. So this one at the retreat, we also cultivate this reflection. But different religion, they practice it differently. Like Christianity, everything is attributed to the God that they believe in. So they always say, thank God for the food. But different understanding will actually bring about different type of teaching. Whereas for the Buddha, he teach the three reflection. So here, the Mahayana one is slightly different. Is it with the first bite of food? Once, the word thing is not so good. Reflect. One, reflect. I vow to cut off all evil. The vow precludes giving rise to an evil thought, to any evil thought. Not to mention doing evil deeds. With the second bite of food, once reflect, I vow to cultivate all good, means the advice of the Buddha. You should not just mechanically recite the vows and consider that sufficient. You need to truly cut off all evil and actually cultivate goodness. Then with the third bite of food, one reflect, I vow to take all living beings across. This is the Bodhisattva vow. The vow means to take all living beings across the sea of suffering to Buddhahood. You should not glance around as you eat. Find out what everyone else is eating until you discover my bowl doesn't have any of the delicacy you had to eat. When you are supposed they use the word literally, when you are supposed to quansi, means contemplate the sound of the world, you are busy quanying si, looking after food and drink. Food and drink is what? Ying si. So this is a pun. Yet unlike the compassionate Huan Xing Bodhisattva, who is mindful of everyone's food and drink in order to offer them some of his own in case they don't have enough. So as Quan Si Ying Bodhisattva, or Quan Yin Si, this is a pun, you are busy grumbling. Why didn't I get any of that in my bowl? How come he gets to eat better food than I do? You should not give rise to such greed. Instead, you should be mindful of the five contemplation. So this is the Mahayana version. For our Theravada tradition, there is this section on contemplation of food, which the Buddha actually prescribed. We need to learn how to reflect and contemplate on the food that is offered in front of us when we are undergoing like monastic practice, like you go for a retreat or you attend dana. Sometimes even you attend the 8 precepts ceremony. So whatever of this ceremony or religious occasion where all this food are offered because you are worthy of offering, like our retreat at Cameron Highland, then for those who make offering to monks, so it is also written in the teaching, the suttas, on how the monk or cultivator should reflect and contemplate on the food offered. First, of course, you must make sure you are worthy of offering. Otherwise, you cannot, in the actual sense of the cultivation, you cannot accept those food where you are not worthy. So first of all, we must reflect that we are worthy of offering because we have cultivated at least the basic advice of the Buddha. We have cultivated precepts which is meritorious. We have determined to walk the path of Dhamma. We cultivate our spiritual faculty. We train our mind to be mindful, to be heedful. We strive on the heedfulness following the advice of the Buddha. Then we determine the phantom, the Tathagata's teaching, the Buddha Dhamma. So all this, as you start to develop the cultivation and the practice, you develop wholesomeness, you develop merits, you develop parami, then you become worthy of offering and whatever things that people offer to you. Then the next reflection is you have to thank all those who have made this food available. So you rejoice in this wholesomeness, and you like to thank all those who have made this food possible. Those who donate, those who help to cook, prepare, then arrange the table and make the offering. Then you have to contemplate after that on the purpose of food. This food are offered to me because of their understanding that we are worthy of the offering. Then this food that is offered to us, we are not to be tempted by it. So we have to reflect clearly. We take this food because there is a need for us to sustain this body so that it can help us to develop the practice, the cultivation. So we take this food not for indulgence, not for craving. With this understanding, you cultivate contentment. You cultivate heedfulness and mindfulness to be ever mindful whether your mind states are within that training as prescribed by the Buddha. You should see your greed. Like what Shen Hua tried to mention, you are comparing the food that you are receiving with those others. Then you are not being mindful, you are not worthy, you are being heedless because of craving, desire. So this style of reflection is very good. Then you would, after that, help to invoke power of merits. After you rejoice with all this understanding and thank all those who have made this food available, then you rejoice then you invoke power of merits. By the power of these merits may arise the causes and conditions for them to realize their good and noble wishes soon as possible. Good and noble wishes are very important. Good are for worldly things, so that they can also have their worldly need fulfilled. Wholesome or pure wishes, they are your spiritual, noble wishes. They are for your spiritual needs, means to become noble ones, enlightened ones. Yeah. So this is how the Buddha under the Theravada tradition teach on reflection. And these are more appropriate. I find it very useful. During the early day, I always reflect, contemplate, and I had a lot of joy whenever I received all this offering. Especially when I attend retreat, when I attend the what they call 8 precepts. Sometimes they have this 3-day, 2-night 8 precepts. And sometimes they have special dana. You have like seminar. Then after that, you are offered. Then there are also what they have in the other tradition, Mahayana tradition and Theravada tradition. Sometimes you go for Fa Hui, they call it. So it's a 7-day or 14-day or 21-day, sometimes 30-day type of. They call it the chanting ceremony or invocation of certain things. So when they do this, they will develop a lot of chanting, a lot of wholesomeness. Then they share merit, they transfer merit, they cultivate the spiritual faculty through the constant chanting. Then they read the sutta. They call it Song Jing and all those things. Then they actually also have Dhamma sharing. So you listen to Dhamma, straighten your views, and develop a lot of these 10 meritorious deeds or action that can be cultivated when you attend such ceremony. So all this will bring forth a lot of wholesomeness. Then when you know how to reflect, contemplate on all this, you develop very, very good mind state. Then we look at the 5 reflection that Mahayana used to teach. First he say, reckon the amount of work it took to bring the food to where you eat it. So this is also a good reflection. People has to maybe plant those food. Then they have to harvest it, wash, clean, prepare, get ready, cook, serve. So there are a lot of work involved in this offering. Figure out how much work the farmer did to plant the field, and the amount of manual labor needed to cultivate, weed, nourish and water the crops as they ripen. When ripe, the rice has to be harvested. Actually not rice, the paddy had to be harvested. What is this CHAFF? Chaffa. Oh, the cook. What is that? Oh, the husk. Oh, had to be separated from the grain. Yeah. It should be husk lah, not chaff. Through this contemplation, you come to realize it was not easy to bring the food to your bowl, means your arms bowl, your butt. So this is how they reflect. Then consider whether your virtuous conduct is sufficient for you to accept the offering, whether you are worthy of offering or not. This one is a very good reflection. Ask yourself, have I cultivated Do I have any cultivation to be worthy of the offering? Do I have any spiritual virtue? If I am receiving people's offering and I have no cultivation, I should be ashamed. What is this word? A penitent. Huh? What is the meaning? Penitent. Never mind, you all go back and check the dictionary. Then encourage yourself, I must immediately cultivate. I must arise the right effort and do the work to end birth and death. Liao sen si, means to become enlightened. If your virtue is abundant, you should say, although I am a greatly virtuous high master, probably the foremost of all high masters in the world, in way virtue, nevertheless I shall work even harder. I accept this offering, and afterwards I shall use even more effort. I still need to progress. If I had certified to the first fruit of Arahantship, then I shall seek the second fruit. If I had certified to the second fruit, I shall seek the third. And if I am in third stage Arahant, then I shall seek to reach the fourth stage. I need to go forward with ever increasing vigor. This is to motivate the individual. They call it diligence. Diligence. Then the third reflection is guard your mind against excesses. You indulge in the food. You overeat, you indulge. So you don't understand the purpose of food. Guard your mind against excesses of which greed and so forth are the source. When you eat, don't starve. Eat just enough, then stop. Do not be greedy for more. Sickness enter through the mouth. If you are too greedy, you get diarrhea. No matter how good the food is, if you eat too much and there is no room for it in your stomach, you will have to move out fast, and you will suffer the illness which result from passing undigested food. So this is the Mahayana way. Actually, it's quite similar. Then the fourth one is, this is a dose of medicine to keep my body from wasting away. The food is like medicine which keeps my body healthy, means to sustain and nourish this body so that it is fit or healthy enough for you to make use of it, to cultivate. To sustain and support you in your cultivation. It is to accomplish, the fifth one is to accomplish my karma of the way that I shall accept this food. Ask yourself, why do I eat this food? Then answer yourself, because I want to cultivate and realize my way karma so that ultimately I can become a Buddha. When members of the Sanghas are given offering, they should not be arrogant. And when no one makes offering to them, they should not harbor greed. Even if you are starving to death, you should cultivate the way. To starve to death in the course of cultivation is a very greatest glory. It's the greatest glory. The worst or the worthiest one, the word, his English is different from us. The worthiest kind of sacrifice. Don't fear starvation. This is what they call endurance. You have to endure, you have to endure, you have to restrain, you have to restrain. Then the word, in any place, the sutta is found, there is a Buddha. That place is just the Buddha's Dhamma body. It is the Buddha's Saririka, means relics. The Sutta itself is the Buddha's Dhamma body. And what is this Sarira? Is it? Eh? Anybody know this word or not? Sarira. I haven't come across this word. At first I thought it's relics. Sali, is it? Yeah, Sali, yeah. It's relics, I think should be correct. Yeah, the sutta itself is the Buddha's Dhamma body. Okay, or a reverend disciple. All people who see the sutta should be as respectful to it as a disciple is to his master. Disciples should respect their master and should respect the sutta. Respecting the sutta is like respecting the master. Respecting the master is like respecting the sutta. Don't discriminate between sutta and master. Why? The Dhamma which you understand has come from your master. The master's Dhamma come from the sutta. They are three and one. One and three. But do not make the mistake of saying, the sutta is my master, so I don't need any other master. If you renounce your master, then the master, which is the sutta, also disappear. All this is Xuanhua's commentary. He have this understanding and he views it that way. But different cultivator, they have different understanding. So to me, the real Dhamma is very important. It's not the word, it's not the book. Understand? It's the actual teaching itself. The gratitude, the respect come from the understanding of the profoundness of the teaching. Not just the what they call outwardly form. You remember last time we talked about? The book, the form, the words is not the real sutta. The real sutta is the teaching. The proclamation of those teaching by the Buddha. These are the real sutta. But they are being written down into books. Or continue through chanting and other things. So the outward form that points towards the teaching, like the finger pointing towards the moon. The finger is not the moon. So the outward form, which is the book, or you call it the sutta book, is not the real sutta. The sutta is the embodiment of the teaching that the Buddha has taught. So these are all the truth that he has expounded, the essential Dhamma. So this is where Xuanhua's commentary differ. He had a lot of respect for all those things. So the way you understand it is depending on your own cultivation and your level of understanding. So initially, of course, you can have that type of respect that Xuanhua developed. His respect for the teacher, for the master, is so strong because he felt the gratitude, the respect towards the teacher who has actually administered the precept and taught him the Dhamma. That's why that respect is very important. Then the same way he believed that the actual Buddha Dhamma is the one that is the source from which his master developed the understanding. And because of that, he treat the sutta as equal to the master or teacher. But I don't think he look at the what they call the external form, means the book, the sutta book itself. He doesn't mean that. But a lot of his disciples take it to mean that as they say you cannot put the book on the floor, disrespect and all. It's just like people say you cannot point your leg at the Buddha. They think the image is the Buddha. You say you're very rude and all those things. If the Buddha can get angry just because somebody put the leg in front, he's not the Buddha, understand? No? But respect is at your mind level, at your heart level. You don't mean it. That's why mental intention is very important. You are not there to like being disrespectful intentionally. That is a different thing. If you do it intentionally, then you don't go and quote, "Hey, brother, to say, can or the Buddha want to get angry?" But you intentionally want to do it out of delusion, and that intention has this, what they call delusion, then there is coming. You don't say there is no coming. Because you intentionally want to create that disrespect because you have wrong view. You think this teaching is not the true teaching. That's why they go and destroy the temple and all those areas. Even the images and all those things. Even those image may not be the Buddha. But your intention behind, out of delusion, is to destroy. Means you create a lot of negative karmic action through what you do. And these are way place sacred that you need to develop faith, respect, understanding, so that you will not do all these foolish things. Because it can bring about wholesomeness and goodness to the follower of that religion. Why should you destroy it just because you think it's different from yours? You shouldn't destroy anything. You must preserve. You must actually encourage wholesomeness. Way place that can bring about wholesomeness and goodness. Then have this what they call understanding. People are just the way they are. No right, no wrong. We have to respect them for what they are. So when you have respect, you do not destroy. You do not create negativity. So this is what is more important to my understanding, rather than to cling on to the form, then argue over all those things. So when your mind has understanding, has Dhamma, it will develop the right attitude and the right mind to accord flow and to develop all the wholesomeness, no more negativity. When you are incapable of negativity, then you have actually progressed. You have developed the understanding of the teaching. You had followed the advice of the Buddha. You can avoid all evil. You are incapable of evil. Then whatever you do will be wholesome. That's why Krishnamurti understood. The absence of evil is already good. Don't try to be good. Be ever mindful not to commit evil, not to do things that will lead to harm, lead to karmic negativity and downfall, lead to fellow living being having to go through suffering and misery. Okay, we have finished chapter 12, finally. So now we are at chapter 13. Okay, we still got 40 minutes. So far, any question? Anybody got any question? Anybody got any question or anything you want to add on to or share? Anybody? Where's the microphone? The caller. You just put up your hand. They will pass you the mic. Don't have? Ah, good. Means everybody understood, huh? So no question. Okay. If that's the case, maybe we continue a bit more. Huh? We'll go to chapter 13. Chapter 13 is more interesting. Turn to page 98. Huh? Receiving and holding Thus Dhamma, that is the title. So I'll read you the sutta. Then Subhati said to the Buddha, the world-honored one, what should the sutta be named? How should we respect and hold it? The Buddha told Subhati, the name of the sutta is Vajra Prajna Paramita. You should respect and hold it by that name. And why, Subhati? Prajna Paramita is spoken of by the Buddha as no Prajna Paramita. Therefore, it is called Prajna Paramita. So, what is your understanding? Huh? Huh? Very strange way. Huh? But the other version is better. Huh? I read to you the other version. The other version explains it this way. Again, he asked Subhati, said to the Buddha, by what name shall we call this sutta so that it can be honored and remembered or studied? Then Lord Buddha replied, this sutta should be called the Prajna Paramita Sutta, or the diamonds that cuts through illusion. That's why it's called Diamond Sutta, Jing Kang Jing. By this name, it shall be revered and studied and observed. What does this name mean? It means that when the Buddha named it, he did not have it in mind, any definite or arbitrary conception. This is better. And so, name it. So, this sutta is named Diamond. Jing Kang Jing. It's because this sutta is very, very hard and sharp, like a diamond that will cut away all arbitrary conception and bring one to the other shore of enlightenment, Nibbana. Then again, Subhati asked, what do you think, Subhati? Oh, sorry, the Buddha asked, what do you think, Subhati? Has the Buddha taught any definite teaching in this sutta? Subhati answered, no, Lord, the Buddha has not taught any definite teaching in the sutta. What do you think, Subhati? Are there many particles of dust in this vast universe? Subhati replied, yes, many, most honored one. Subhati, when the Buddha speaks of particle of dust, it does not mean I am thinking of any definite or arbitrary thought. I am merely using these words as a figure of speech. So, as explained earlier on by the Buddha, the word is not that thing. Like the word Dhamma is not Dhamma. So this one is a very important explanation. Because the Buddha said, I am merely using these words as a figure of speech. They are not real, but only illusion. It is just the same with the word universe. This word does not exert any definite or arbitrary idea. I'm only using the word as word. So the word universe is not the universe, you understand, huh? That one is very clear. Like the word table is not a table. There is a word. So these are words created by living beings to express something. That's why this become words, concept, idea, to establish or explain something. Then the Buddha continued. Subhati, what do you think? Can the Buddha be perceived by means of the 32 physical marks or characteristics? No, most honored one. The Buddha cannot be perceived by his 32 physical characteristics. Why? Because the Buddha teaches that they are not real, but are merely called the 32 physical characteristics or marks. Then Subhati, if a good and faithful person, whether male or female, has for the sake of compassion and charity been sacrificing his life for generation upon generation, for as many generations as the grains of sand in 3,000 universes, and another follower who has been studying and observing even a single section of this sutta and explain it to others, that person's blessing and merits would be far greater. So this is the comparison that Lord Buddha always repeated towards the end of each chapter in many of the 32 chapters. To emphasize, the key thing is to emphasize to you that this Diamond Sutta is very, very unique and very important. You can cultivate until the level as pointed out by him in this Diamond Sutta, then you know the field of merits that arise. The parami that is being developed is far, far more than the one that is cultivated by the normal living being who couldn't understand this level of Dhamma. Like that day at the Sunday Wu Ping Ching Se class. Now it gave us the condition to share this. We talk about the three level of teachings. You see, when you develop this three level of perfection of the 10 paramitas, or the first one is the superficial level. Superficial level means the normal cultivation by most living beings. Then after that, you will go on to the next level. The next level is what they call, there is a name for it. We call it, that day we mentioned it. I have to check this one up. I forgot what the word is. The 10 perfection, the three level of 10 perfection cultivation. Anybody can remember what page? Ah, I got it now. Okay. Page 30. Okay. The perfection of generosity is fully developed. The superior perfection, they call it the superficial, then the superior. Then the last one is the supreme. So these are the three words they use. But I think in the actual teaching, it is different. When you are cultivating at the mind level, thought level, then it is superficial. Superficial means you just try to develop the cultivation using your normal form and mind consciousness. Then later on, as you move further into the practice or cultivation, your understanding become different. Then the Dhamma that you're understanding goes beyond the form level. It reached the mind level. But mind level, you are still actually at the mundane mind. You have not penetrated the true mind, the true nature. So, like I explained that day, the true teaching, the true cultivation You have to develop the ability to be mindful throughout the day in the midst of life. Means you must have this ability to train your mind until it is so calm, so peaceful, so still and so silent and ever mindful throughout the day. Until you can realize that silent mind, or what they call paucity, tranquility of mind, stillness of mind, then there is no more thought, but you are fully aware. Then you can touch that nature. Yeah. When you can touch that nature, that is pointing direct to the true mind. That is what Hui Ning's teaching is all about. So not until you can reach that level of cultivation, you have not really developed the actual meditation. That's why I used to share with you all during the early days, I think, during the Heart Sutta stage. The sharing is so unique that I always mention this. Not until you can develop this daily mindfulness, until it's very stable, until you can be mindful in the midst of life, most of the time, you have yet to cultivate the real meditation. Yeah. Which means you cannot realize your true mind. You cannot develop that silence, the awareness within, to be with your true mind, with your true nature, the self nature. You can never penetrate the higher Dhamma. You can never realize the penetrative teaching. Then your mind will still not be able to realize that cessation, which is Nibbana. So all this, as you develop the cultivation, you will go through. Then it brings me to one part. I need to check my handphone because somebody sent it to me. I think Miss Lee, he summarized it. Because I cannot recall what I spoke. I need to refer. These are like pointer that she wrote down, I think. So Miss Lee wrote this. He said, last Sunday is a very good talk. All of us wish to listen again. It's about the true understanding of virtue and merits. That one is in the Platform Sutta. How this come from the three types of bodies and what are the laws that governs. Oh, this one she wrote wrongly. Law governance this. Law governing this. The nature's law that governs all of life and existence. I replied, I said, yeah, the talk was very unique and special because of condition then. And it can never be repeated. But don't worry, just let things be. I remember you said recorder's memory full already the previous week when recording halfway through. So did you copy them to a memory stick, then clear all the memories? So this part, I think, according to Chin Hao's reply, I think she cleared. There are enough memory, except I think they didn't check when they pressed it. You could have double pressed the thing. That's why it was not recorded. Anyway, what is important is, I remember, there was a lady who asked the question after reading one of my transcript book. So I try to create back the condition so that I can share with you again. You see, we have these three types of bodies. You can remember the three type of bodies or not? Trikaya. Very good. Trikaya is the three type of bodies. Okay. The first one is Nimanakaya. What is this Nimanakaya? I think got R. Nimana. This one is called the functional body. Functional body that performs the function of the living being. For the Buddha, it performs the function of a Buddha, so we call it a functional body. Or sometimes in Mahayana, they call it the physical body. I think Rosen. Inghuasana. It is something to do with the functional body, the flesh body or functional body. Or physical body, sorry. Flesh or physical body. Physical body. That's why some they call it karmically conditioned, like this form of mind. That we come with the vehicle and the tool. And this one is not the true body. You understand? Then after that, you have the second one. What is this? Sambhogakaya. So this one is called the reward body. Or spiritual body. Where all the spiritual cultivation, your perfection, everything that you have developed. This one is actually in your spiritual nature. So this one is stored in your spiritual nature. Spiritual nature. Whereas this one is with your karmic nature. Means karmically conditional. So this one is karma. This one is perfection and cultivation. So they call it the reward body. So this reward body is after you have perfected, then you have this, what they call spiritual nature or spiritual body, Sambhogakaya, spiritual nature. So this spiritual nature, when you have cultivated it until it has reached maturity or perfection, like what Sammasambuddha did, Sakyamuni. After he has developed all this perfection, then he come for his last birth, 2,600 years ago, as Sakyamuni Buddha at that time. So underneath the Bodhi tree that night, what happened was, this Sambhogakaya come back to join with the Nimanakaya. Then they transform. They transform and become the third body. This one is called Dhammakaya. This is the Dhamma body. Or sometimes they call it the transformation body. So now you can follow, eh? When this one combined with this one, these two, then these two merge. And the Nimanakaya that is connected to all the perfection and the wisdom, they will transform and become Dhammakaya. So this is the transformation body. That's why after that, the Buddha, through this functional body that perform the function of the Buddha, speaks the Dhamma. Understand? Yeah? So that's why this is called the transformation body, eh? Or the Dhammakaya, which is the Dhamma body that speaks the Dhamma. So it comes about in three stages. First stage, you have to develop the cultivation of the normal form and mind when you come into this world. It's just like Sakyamuni Buddha before the age of 35 underneath the Bodhi tree. Before he meditate and this one connect, he has to make use of this Nimanakaya, the form and mind, to cultivate. So this is the first body. Yeah. Yeah. So before this wisdom come, whatever cultivation you do is based on the teaching that you heard. Understand? Yeah. Then your interpretation of it. Yeah. That's why right and wrong, good and bad, still got duality and all those things. That's why the emperor that asked Bodhidharma, yeah, how much merit do I have? Because I have actually built so many temples. Yeah. Then promote the translation of the teaching. Then also they have sponsored, built so many temples, sponsored so many of their this so-called spiritual functions and all those things, and support the Sangha, and did all the translation and everything. So when he asked Bodhidharma how much merits he has received, so Bodhidharma being an enlightened being, to him, if you want to talk about true merits, means without evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, then he replied, zero. He said, no merits. But the emperor couldn't understand him. At the mundane level, the emperor will definitely don't agree. He said, how can? I'm an emperor. I understand that this is very important, very virtuous, very meritorious. That's why I go all out. To build the temple, to support the Sangha, and to bring about all this good work. And I have done so much, and you say I got zero merits. So this emperor couldn't understand. Because at that level, he can never understand, because he is not enlightened yet. To Bodhidharma, who is already enlightened, to him, is if your action, because based on what the emperor told him, the emperor still believed that there is a mark of a self. I am the emperor. I am doing all this. Then there is this ego that wanted all these merits because it is very meritorious. And he wants to know how much merit he has received by doing all this. These are mundane merits, yes. Mundane merit you have a lot. But the supramundane merits you have zero. That's why Bodhidharma is not wrong. So at this level of cultivation, when you talk about the first type of body, the functional body, before the spiritual body come in, you are still at the level of the mundane cultivation. Means you are still thought-based. You have not penetrated the Dhamma. So your action and your whatever mental intention, you do all this because there is a sense of a self, a mark of a self. Then there is a sense of somebody receiving this merits. So your action is out of greed, for this merit. And the delusion is there is a person who do it. So now you see, yeah, the mark of a self and the mark of receiving that merit means the greed for that. So if your action is out of the delusion, the evil root of delusion, that there is a self, a being inside there doing it. So that is sakkayaditti, self-delusion. So the evil roots is there. That's why it's not a pure merit. Then the other one is, you act because there is merit. So your action is out of greed for that merit, even though it's a very noble desire. Understand? Because it is really, really wholesome. But because of that greed for that merit, it becomes tinted. Tinted. T-A-I-N-T-E-D. Tinted merits. So because of that, Bodhidharma says zero. Then when you realize the enlightenment, the normal sainthood or whatever, then you, through that understanding, you cultivate differently. You develop the what they call cultivation at the mind level. You transcend the form Dhamma. Then you can see the impermanent, the suffering state, and the empty nature and non-self nature of all phenomena. And through that, you realize the various stages of enlightenment, starting from the first stage of sainthood onward. But even as you cultivate from the various types of sainthood until arahantship, then from there, even when you start the bodhisattva way cultivation, you are actually starting to cultivate direct using your true mind. It's only after you have developed the understanding of how to develop the spiritual faculty to overcome the mental hindrance, then your mind is able to develop the inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness, and realize the paucity or silent mind, tranquility of mind, stillness of mind, means that true mind. Where you can realize that, or initially have a glimpse of that, that is the beginning of the real spiritual journey, the spiritual cultivation of this Sambhogayakaya. This one take off. But this one also another very, very long way of cultivation. And at this level, initially when you cultivate, your speed is a lot much faster than the one using thought base. You understand? There are no comparison at all. But when you reach this Sambhogayakaya stage, when you penetrate all the various type of earlier teaching of the Theravada and other things, even the Mahayana teaching, all the other teaching, before they hit the Diamond Sutta, Prajna Paramita Sutta. This cultivation still have a mark, understand? Mark of ourself, but not strong, because at the first stage of sainthood, that self-delusion, I have to draw this one out, then only you understand. Let's say this one is the physical form, okay? Then there's a consciousness trapped inside. So this is consciousness trapped inside. Consciousness trapped inside. Then this is the physical body. Physical body. So these two you combine, we call it a five aggregate of form and mind. Okay. So initially, as you cultivate the sotapan, first stage of sainthood, They will come to know that this fine aggregate of form and mind is not them. You understand? They realize that already. They are not deluded by this already. They know this is karmically conditional. Form and mind, just a vehicle and a tool for them to come to this world. They are not deluded anymore. But the problem is, at this level, he have it at the Dhamma level on the sadhana. Dhamma level means he cannot leave it every moment, every instant. Even as a Sotapan, when he had this realization, every thought, every action, every mental state or mental intention behind everything he do, he still hold a mark. Although he know that this is not him, he still hold a mark that there is being to be liberated. There are Dhamma to be understood. Yeah. Of course, he know. He know you, he know me. Yeah. The mark of a self maybe is already very, very much weakened already. It's only at the thought level. He still hold the egoic mind at a very fine level. He still has this notion of a being inside there. Like they call it the subtle ego. Eh? The subtle ego is there until anagami stage. You remember? Mana. Remember? Mana. The subtle ego. The mana is like self-conceit. Understand not? A very, very subtle conceit. Like, wow. It's just like they will have this thought or this idea that I'm already a Sotapan. May he know that this form and mind connected to the wisdom, this one is a Sotapan. Yeah. Then the Sakadagami will be one stage further. Yeah, they attenuated the other two, greed and hatred. Then even at the Anagami, yeah, they completely severed the first five fetters. Yeah. The greed and the sensual desire and ill will also, they completely severed. Second stage of saying what you attenuate on it. So before you become an arahan, you still have the self-conceit. That's why you still act and do a lot of things through your thought process, having that subtle ego. Yeah. And you still think that living being, putujana, they still haven't realized. They are so deluded. They have not realized this. They still got all this. So that thought, they still carry. That's why it's called a subtle ego. Mana. Yeah. So at the first, second, and third stage of sainthood, this form and mind, they still have that. So when they cultivate the spiritual perfection, because they don't go through arahantship, they cannot start the bodhisattva way. And because of that, their cultivation, even though so much faster than the Nimana Kaya, the what they call the form level, or they call it the thought-based level, but compared to those who has gone through the Bodhisattva way, who has reached the later stage of the Bodhisattva way, the eighth stage onward, their cultivation is still with mark. That's why when you come to the Diamond Sutta, when you read through the Diamond Sutta, then when you understand what the Buddha meant, that's why in this chapter, I remember, if I'm not wrong, yeah, I used to tell you all last time, the Diamond Sutta never teach any Dhamma, you remember? It only teach you how to develop the highest teaching and perfection. Means you must cultivate until there is no mark. No mark of a self, no mark of living being, no mark of any Dhamma. Then only your perfection, your cultivation can become very different. Then the merits and the wholesomeness that arise from this type of cultivation following the Dhamma, the Diamond Sutta, is way, way even beyond the sainthood way and the arahant way and the initial bodhisattva way. That's why actually, as you understand later on, when you reach the very end, then you realize actually it's a wasting time, all the early stages. But the funny thing about Dhamma is, before you go through this stage, you can never understand. You will be doing it, understand? Then as you pass this stage, then you look back, you say, why so stupid? Thought-based meditation, wasting time, all is so slow. But before they actually can come out of it, they got no choice. They will be trapped there. That's why when Hui Ning came, pointing direct to the true mind, they bypass all the thought-based meditation. They bypass all the method, technique, and everything. They go direct to the silent mind, the true mind. And that is the beginning of the sainthood way and the enlightened being's cultivation. So now you understand. Yeah? So these are the three levels of cultivation that you can actually penetrate. And the fastest is, of course, Diamond Sutta. But that one, you need a lot of understanding and wisdom. You need to penetrate a lot of things. Yeah. But this Diamond Sutta, no teaching one. You look at it, no teaching at all. It only describes to you. You have to cultivate until that level. Then only you can be termed as the cultivator who has reached the cultivation of the Diamond Sutta. So this is what actually that day I shared with them. But then about the nature's law, the Panchaniyama, you have to go through the Heart Sutta note, then the seminar paper, to develop the corresponding understanding so that you can link the whole thing. Otherwise, you cannot understand the teaching. Because this is about cultivation. And this one is very, very technical. Very technical. And this one needs a lot of meditation. You need to realize the true mind, the silent mind, and all those things. Then only you can penetrate. So when it comes to the three level of cultivation, like the perfection. So the first level is the general, superficial perfection. Yeah? Then after that, you go on to the superior. The superior is like the sainthood way, where they actually develop sufficient mindfulness, heedfulness. Then they will continue to cultivate and penetrate. Then when that understanding stabilizes, then when they go beyond arahantship, then when they have the condition to go the bodhisattva way, then they will start to explore all this type of higher teaching. The cultivation that can bring about tremendous understanding and progress. Then finally, when they reach very advanced stage of the bodhisattva way, they will penetrate the Diamond Sutta. The cultivation of no mark. As long as there is any mark, that cultivation is still not supreme. The word supreme. It may be a superior perfection and cultivation, but it's not the supreme. Well, the supreme is the Buddhahood, the ultimate Sammasambuddhahood. So with this, maybe I will end today's sharing. Then after that, we see how. Oh, 10:30, exactly 10:30. Oh yeah, 10:30. Okay, we end. You got any question so far? Maybe you can have one. Is it clear now? That day was not recorded. But that day the condition was better because I got 3 hours. I can explain very detailed. That day that brother he came out and he wrote in Mandarin. Oh, very good. Then the condition arise. Then that girl also, I forgot her name already. She also gave very good question. She asked very good question. Because she read my transcript book. The first book she read was, Who Are You? What Are You? Oh, that one. Then she asked a very good question. She asked me about what is the meaning of the two types of awareness. Specific phenomenal awareness and spacious awareness without a center. She asked this type of question, which was very good. And that one, I think, was it recorded? First part recorded, I think. Second part lost. That one also wasted. Then after that, the next Sunday, again the whole talk was not recorded. Meant to be. So then he asked me to repeat it today. You know. I said, how to repeat it today? Because unless there is condition. So that's why I try to create condition, but cannot. It just cannot. It so happened the Diamond Sutta got one part. Then I try to link back, but it's a different condition. Different class, different sharing, different condition. So things come out also different. Yes, you ask.
Rachel,
yes.
Can I just ask?
Yes.
When we always say, when you connect with your true nature, what level would that be?
That is just the beginning of the true spiritual practice or cultivation. The real meditation only starts when you have the ability to connect to your true mind. Understand? Yeah? When you can realize that true mind, not in a concentrated state, no, not in a conditioned state of focusing and what they call absorption. No. It must be a free mind. You know, as a free mind, no? A mind that is free, means not holding on to anything, not in focus, not in concentration, nothing. The mind that is just quiet, peaceful, silent, relaxed, just aware. No movement of thought at all. All the aggregate, no movement, except the pure awareness is still there. That is realizing the true mind, to be with the true nature. You can only do that if you know how to relax and maintain awareness, silence. And the lying meditation is the fastest way to stabilize that. If you don't do lying meditation, it's very difficult. But the moment you sit, you go into energy field. So easy to go into energy field. I realized the relaxed state of awareness is either you do it in daily life, but that one is also not easy. It's only easy to those who really have the past and know how to do it. Because I got it in 2 weeks. So I don't know what you call it, easy or difficult. Because it came by itself 2 weeks after I determined to be aware throughout the day. Then after that, I realized my awareness was with me all the time. All the time. Then I'm not in a state of concentration, absorption or whatever. My mind is free. Then after that I realize meditation becomes very simple. The moment I sit, relax, my mind silent, still. Then later on I realize when I lie down, it stabilizes so much faster. Then later on the cessation comes, then the mundane mind collapses very fast. Within 9 months everything happened. But it's because of the past cultivation. This life cannot, no way. No way. That's why I told a lot of Kayamita, a lot of things that I come to understand and realize this life, I never learned it this life. Nobody taught me and I never learned them this life. Then how does this form of mind understand? It must come from the past cultivation. Because when it has the condition to actually develop the daily mindfulness and connect to that true mind, then I realize a lot of things just come back to this form of mind. Where the spiritual nature that is connected, it will inherit, just like karma. You inherit everything, born of it, had to it, conditioned, supported by it, and you are what you are. So the moment you inherit, it will come back to you. Then it will take you through all the stages of cultivation. Then I realized I went through all the stages of cultivation. This form of mind came to the understanding by itself. Then later on, it reached back to where it's supposed to be. And then from there, it start again. Then I realized the more I share, the more I understand. Because the more I share, I interact with more living beings. Understand? And this Dhamma is like qian bian wan hua, understand? so much variation. If you don't come out and share, you cannot meet with the number of beings, and you cannot experience all this type of thing that are within the civilization and all those things. That's why it's unending. That's why the law of karma, the Buddha say, is very, very complex, very complicated. It's very difficult to understand because the causes and conditions behind is not just linear like what we used to explain. Because of this condition, that thing happened. No, because it is interactive with all phenomena in the whole universe, not only this field. And there are so much of this variation, possibility, and all those things. That's why not until you have gone through that type of cultivation, that type of what they call exposure and perfection, you can never understand. That's why the Buddha specifically say, karma is very, very complicated, very complex. It needs a great being like a Sammasambuddha to really understand it perfectly. Okay? So that true nature, that true mind, if you diligently develop the cultivation of the spiritual faculty, then you do your daily mindfulness, it will come. It will come. Yeah? Then all of a sudden, actually those who follow the lying down meditation, you can realize that true mind very fast. Very fast. Especially at the retreat there. Where we got so many days. Then you must develop the daily mindfulness first. Then after that, meditation become very simple. Your mind settle down very fast. Initially, like when you settle into the retreat or whatnot, you can still have this type of activity in your brain there. But you don't worry. You let it move. You just relax, silent and aware. Then through the awareness, you will see how it slows down. Because it comes with the wisdom, the straightening of you, the right view, the right understanding. Then as you are less and less deluded, avijja paccaya sankhara, where you straighten your view, become less. The mind does not stir so much. The mind does not react or move like before already. Then a lot of things is not interested in already. It understands already. That you will not do all those things anymore. That's why you have more and more moment of quietness, silence, stillness. Then this one will expand, become more and more, more and more. Until one day you realize, no movement at all. Like the whole thing becomes so still. Like the silence of nature, you all of a sudden realize it. When the mind is without activity, it's so still. Then after that, no movement at all. Then it really no thought on inside there. Oh, no thought on. That is your true mind. Before the arising of the aggregate of mind. Before the knowing. Okay? Yeah, we better end. Otherwise, 10:40 already. 10 minutes. We have taken extra 10 minutes of your time. Okay, we do the sharing of merits. Transfer of merits. Then after that, maybe you make your aspiration. Sharing our merits with the devas. Akasata ca bumata deva naga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa cirang rakkhantu lokasasana ittavata camehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Imina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patiya sadu sadu sadu. Okay, wait, I promise Susan that we will do something for the sister. She called me just now before. before 7 p.m. I think she was at the hospital with her sister, huh? Like you all know, huh? Her sister is now in ICU, huh? Going through some very critical stage. So the doctor already said it all depends on her karma. So because of affinity, huh? Because Susan called up, then Susan also knew, huh? Because I told him these are realities of life and existence. He said for her, she understand, no problem. But she just want to make that request because hopefully she wants to do whatever she can to help the sister so that she can have a better life in the hereafter, immediately should anything happen. Then I asked her, is she a Buddhist? She said, yes, she's a Buddhist. She used to follow her travel all over. So because of that, I say, you don't worry, we will do something. So let us now recall to mind all of the wholesomeness that we have developed over our last 2.5 hours of sharing and rejoicing and cultivation and whatever wholesomeness that we have developed. We would like to invoke the power of merits. By the power of all this wholesomeness and this merit, may it arise the causes and conditions for Susan's sister, Sister Te Sui Lui, who is now in Subang Medical Center. May she recover to good health if she has the condition to extend her life. Then, even if there is no condition, may it also arise the causes and condition for her to have a good rebirth so that she can continue with her Dhamma practice and cultivation in the immediate future after her passing away from this segment of her life. Then may all this wholesomeness too pave the way for her to have the good life in the hereafter, in whatever rhyme of rebirth she may take. Then may all this wholesomeness too be shared by all beings who have the causes and conditions to receive them. And may all Dhamma friends and Kayanamita who has radiated all this loving kindness, metta, love, and good thought, may it too arise the causes and conditions for them to realize their good and noble wishes so that they can too progress along the path of Dhamma. Then together with all this wholesomeness, we rejoice one more time. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then we dedicate this merits to all beings throughout the entire existence so that the human consciousness, the universal consciousness can improve and progress for the better of humanity and mankind. Okay, thank you so much. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. You can now pay respect to Lord Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and all the worthy ones.
Oh,